Today on the Cooligans, we are joined by guest co-host David Goss of Soccer Wives. We're going to be talking about the Chicago Fire situation with Greg Berhalter, Klopp going to Red Bull, Man City trial updates, Paul Pogba, should he come to MLS? And we talk about the 22 under 22 MLS list. We got a lot to say today. All this and more today on the Cooligans. David Goss, I want to talk to you about something very quickly because this is, I can't talk to many people about this outside of probably my my normal co-host who is not here again. but I did a stand-up show over the weekend on Friday last week, and it was in Newark. And I saw my, so first of all, the host of the show, Justin Williams, a great comic, great dude. He invited me to do the show. I headlined this show, and it's in Newark. So he brings me up, and I, you know, a lot of stand-up show hosts, they're always like, hey, well, how do you want me to bring you up? Like, what do you want me to say? And I said, hey, just mention the podcast, mention the Cooligans. And he's been great. I've done the show a bunch of times. So every single time, hosts always find, like, they're like, oh, okay, let me jazz this up in some particular way. And he said, he brought me up. He's like, this guy hosts one of the biggest podcasts in the country, biggest soccer podcast. And he goes, they cover MLS and all this stuff. And he specifically highlighted MLS. So I'm just like happy that he's like, all right, giving MLS a little bit of shine. And so I come up on stage and I start talking about that. I've never been brought up as MLS being a credit. So, this is a good sign for where we are in soccer in America.
The growth.
But the cool part or interesting part was that there were several Red Bulls fans in the crowd wearing, like, there was a dude wearing Red Bull hat. There was another dude that when I to be a fun, you know, we just had the Hudson River Derby. I'm like, let me just bring it up. Let me just talk about it because, yo, 5-1 in your building, that felt pretty good. So I started talking about it and immediately start getting booed by all the Red Bull fans. And so it's always fun to start a stand-up show with boos.
Getting booed, yeah.
Okay, that's how I start my shows. It's always a nice feeling. But I think the fact that that moment could occur at a stand-up comedy show when it's about an MLS rivalry that, you know, where you know, the soccer is definitely not the preeminent sport in New York and New Jersey. But the fact that the culture is slowly sort of growing. So all I'm saying is, as I'm doing stand-up shows, if you are a fan of a rival of my team, boo me, because that just tells me that American soccer is where it needs to be. How do you feel about that?
I feel amazing. This is what we've been waiting for. This was the white smoke coming out of the building.
Yes.
Saying soccer has made it. Was when will Christian get booed at a show because he's an NYCFC supporter? And we are here, baby. We have arrived.
I love it. David Goss, thank you so much for joining me today. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody, here on Yahoo Sports.
Yahoo!
David Goss loves that sound.
I love that.
Every time. I love how every time I press it, regardless of who the guest is that we have on the show, they are immediately startled. No matter how many times they've heard it before. Because does Yahoo still use that, the Yahoo Yodel, anywhere? I think we've brought it back. I can't remember of any advertisement or anything. So you're
EVP marketing as well as one of the shows at Yahoo.
I'm just hoping that my pay reflects that, David. soon enough. But welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco. I am joined by David Goss of Soccer Wise. How's soccer doing? Soccer Wise,
it's very wise right now. We are covering all things soccer. It's been good. If you don't listen, please do. We are live on YouTube, Twitch, three times a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 2 or 3 p.m. Eastern time. I do a weekend recap every Monday to sort of get you up to speed on what happened in MLS, NWSL, obviously national team coming up the next 2 weeks. And I just sort of launched a new show for us on Fridays, Half Mailbag, which you can get access to and throw questions in if you're a Patreon subscriber for us. And then Soccer Chat. So we talked with the the GM of the Orlando Pride, Haley Carter, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Which was really, really fun. They obviously won the Shield and have set the record for the undefeated streak. We talked to her about the team, but then talked about the new CBA as someone who was a former player, but now has to build rosters of like how it will affect them. So that was really fun. We have Ben Pierman coming up tomorrow, who's the head coach for the Charleston Battery, as well as the technical director. And they just sold Nick Markanich to a second division team in Spain. They sold Fidel Barajas. So they're doing some really cool things.
In the weeds of American soccer.
Everything soccer wise.
I love
that's the goal.
It is. It's challenging work. And it's for the most part, it's usually underappreciated, I will say. So thank you so much, David. We have to start today with a couple other things going on in American soccer. I think you must have talked about this on SoccerWise already, but Greg Berhalter joining the Chicago Fire as head coach and sporting director. This is a bit of a, I think I have the recency bias of the failure at Copa America. And I'm just like, oh man.
Yes, you do.
Is he going to bring, is he bringing those negative vibes, or should we, is this a resurgence? Are we getting back to maybe what the Greg Berhalter at Columbus Crew, and then the sporting director part? Now I'm starting to, then I get a little bit like, all right, are we going to have another like Vermees situation where you can have a bad season, but hey, who's the guy who's going to fire me? And then he's just looking at the mirror like, I guess nobody. Yeah. So what are your initial thoughts when you heard the news?
So this was one that me and Tom on SoccerWise, we've basically talked as if it had happened the last few weeks. So we weren't shocked, to be clear. He lives in Chicago because U.S. soccer is based there. So he didn't want to move.
Not for much longer, right?
No, not for much longer. But if he didn't want to move, there was an MLS job opening. It is a clean fit. Chicago Fire have a history where they were they were probably one, maybe DC United first, right? One of the genuine relevant markets in Major League Soccer. In the early 2000s, before Beckham and all those things, they were getting 20, 25,000 fans at Chicago Fire games consistently. Under Bob Bradley, they were winning trophies. They won trebles. They set records, all these things. And then the club moved to Bridgeview. They stopped spending money. The league changed and they fell through the floor. And so when you look at a club like that and now new ownership that has spent money, but poorly, you just need the right guiding hand. And the history is Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena, the two U.S. men's national team coaches who have come back to Major League Soccer after being men's national team coaches. Bruce Arena built the Galaxy with Beckham and Keane after that, and Bob built LAFC after that. So the history there is pretty good. It's a little bit like went pro, comes back to coach college. Like Greg Berhalter has been in some situations that not every MLS manager will have that experience, those connections, those experiences, but he's also been around MLS. So he's left, he's pushed himself, he's challenged himself internationally, he's met people and learned from all over the world while still having a very intense eye on the league and the way the league has changed and all these things. I think most of it's a home run. I can understand the hesitancy of having him have both jobs. This is the Chicago Fire's fault. They have a sporting director who is leaving at the end of the year. But instead of hiring someone new who could then hire Greg Berhalter, they've had him stay through the end of the year. And now you're in a time crunch where if Greg's the guy you want, you have to hire him. And if you're going to hire him, it's really hard to hire his boss after you hired him.
Exactly.
And that's often what you see with clubs is sporting directors don't want to inherit coaches. They want to hire their own coaches. So if you're hiring Greg because the time crunch is there, he's the right guy. And I believe he is. Then you kind of got stuck in a spot where you have to put him in both roles. Now the key for success is how you set up the organization. Like who is his number two in the front office? Who's his number two in the coaching staff?
Yeah, this is a, the Fire have been, I mean, they've been pretty bad the last a few years. And, I remember going to, was it 2017 MLS All-Star in it? And
yeah, or 16?
Yeah. One of the two. And I remember That was just like that was my first time in Chicago. I'd never been there before. And then
it's the only time I've been there too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, that was when I think,
because we normally travel for MLS stuff and the Fire have been bad. Right. So we haven't so gone no real, to any playoff games or anything like
no
that.
No real incentive to head out there. But the, you know, I have a fond there's like a weirdly fond connection to the Chicago Fire because there's so many people that I know that that support the team. We filmed a YouTube video where we profiled Matt Javier. Have you ever heard of Matt Javier? He is the Mexican dude that owns a sort of string of taco restaurants, Mexican food places around Chicago, and he is one of the biggest Chicago Fire fans, and what he wouldn't do at a lot of games, and he goes on away games, and there was a like sort of a legendary moment of him. I believe in Columbus, where he went to a Columbus Fire match, and with the he bought 100 beers for the fans. So he basically at the line, and he told the person at the booth, like, next 100 beers on me, which is just, that's it. You are forever. I mean,
you're a legend.
Build the statue of Matt.
Except for to customer 101, who was like in line the whole time.
I can't wait for this. It's going to be a great moment. So, it's you know, even, you know, we've had a chance to speak to like Bastian Schweinsteiger. And like, so there's something that like this team being just underachieving to just this brutal sort of level. I mean, they won the Wooden Spoon, I think, once in the last 10 years or something like that. Something along those lines. And there's such,
I think they've only been in the playoffs once, and it was the Schweinsteiger year, 1 year.
Yeah.
And that was it. And the part that, so as someone who cares about this, right, as someone who genuinely made my day was made because you got booed at a show on Friday because of MLS, right? Someone who cares about all this.
Sure.
What's offensive or scary is the amount the owner has spent. Joe Mansueto spent millions of dollars to not play at Bridgeview. Like, he spends millions to not play in that stadium and to play at Soldier Field. Shaqiri was the highest paid player in Major League Soccer before Messi came. So what's scary is, if this all keeps failing, does he stop spending? Or do other owners look at it and say, don't spend? So, like, we are in a window now where it's like, we need the Fire to be good with the money they spend. And for it to be 10 plus years without winning a playoff game or one playoff appearance, like, all of that is unacceptable with the amount of investment they have made.
Right, right. So it just feels like for Berhalter, this is a great kind of situation. It's just like the team is in sort of dire straits. And money's coming in. They have, I think, two DP spots open. It's an interesting sort of project from his perspective, because he's like, I can't do any worse, you know?
Yeah. And they sold a center forward who scores Champions League goals Aston Villa.
It's unbelievable.
And they didn't play him, but they still made a ton of money off of him. So there's money there. Gaga Slonina, out the door, record sale. There's money there. They've got Gutierrez and Scott who are coming, Brady, I do that every time, mm-hmm. who are coming through, more young players. Chicago is a soccer hotbed, right? It is one of the biggest cities. The sport is, the passion for the sport is there at the youth levels. The players coming through are really good. They're the middle of the Midwest. Any player in that area wants to come there. Michigan still doesn't have an MLS team. Those players you can recruit. Indiana doesn't have an MLS team. Those players you can recruit. So, like, in all the different avenues, you're a club that has now recruited Shaqiri and Schweinsteiger from a high level. They went and they've spent money for young DPs. They've done it poorly, but, like, they've appealed to those players. They've got young players coming through. And if you're an MLS player, Chicago's, like, ideal because it's not that expensive for like LA, New York, but also you get to live in a major city and play professional sports at Soldier Field.
Exactly.
So, like, there's a lot going right here, except they suck. That's it.
It's so disappointing, man. That fan base deserves a lot better.
Yes.
Next up, I do want to ask about Jurgen Klopp, because this, I think, you know, we all wanted him essentially probably be the U.S. men's national team coach. And then he goes out and says, nah, I've been seeing somebody this entire time. Jurgen Klopp is now the head of, what's the exact title? Head of soccer, head of soccer at Red Bull. That's it. Just head of soccer. It was just soccer head. Let's go. I love it. But Jurgen Klopp is going into an administrative role. And that is at Red Bull feels a little bit weird. And maybe does that mean does, you know, when you think of, I guess, gegenpressing and the sort of Red Bull way, does Jurgen Klopp fit in that perfectly, or is he going to change things up a little bit?
No, if you go back and you look at Klopp's career, Ralf Rangnick and him were sort of two of the first.
Okay.
And I think he quotes Ralf Rangnick as a mentor of his. So if you go and read, what was the book that Ralf Hoenigstein wrote about the recreation of German soccer? Not Das Football.
I don't know the name, but I know. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I know
that. If you go back and read that book, there's a historic moment that he quotes or he talks about where Klopp and Rangnick were on TV as commentators while they were both lower division coaches talking about the ability for tactics to change games. Because at the time, the assumption was talent wins. So he goes back, way back with this philosophy, these ideas, this group, and I think he'll fit in pretty cleanly. I think there's got to be a lot of Liverpool fans who believe in the beauty and love of the game, and it's more than a corporation and all who have got to be hurt right now.
Because there was...
The energy drink is where he chose to land.
The video that Jurgen made, I don't know if you saw the video he made to like announce his new position.
I did not.
But there's a little bit of like he's apologizing. Do you know what I mean? He's not saying it like, I'm so excited about this position and blah, blah. He's just like, okay, let me explain what's going on, everybody.
I sold out.
I know this seems rash. so it's just a funny aspect. The first thing I honestly thought is if he, and it's also, I love that. It's like head of soccer, right? Yeah. It's like,
it's a fake job.
We know. But when I hear that, I hear, okay, is this man going to put a little bit of attention to Red Bull New York? Because, I mean, we saw, I had seen the clip of you and Bogert talking about the, I forgot how who, the executive at Red Bull, who was basically saying that he wasn't happy with the growth in MLS and the development of the players. And Bogert went off, bro. He was just like, bro, that's all you, baby. Look in the mirror. It's your fault that the development has not gone at the pace that you want. So, you know, so I wonder if Jurgen Klopp is going to take some ownership and responsibility over essentially, you know, it seems like Red Bull, New York Red Bull has, I mean, look, yes, they've had some underachieving seasons. Obviously, they had a bad loss in the Hudson River Derby, but I think it's like 14 years row, like qualifying for the playoffs. Like they're not a terribly run team, but they just cannot get over that hump. And I wonder if Jurgen Klopp is going to address that in some way.
Yeah, they have a ceiling. Their ceiling is when they get good, for the most part, in the ecosystem of Red Bull, they then have to dismantle themselves to move on rather than make the one more move to get over the top, right? You look at some of the best teams and they get to the edge. LAFC adds Chicho Arango. TFC before that added Victor Vasquez. Atlanta continued to spend to try and push themselves. They picked up, I believe, Darlington Nagbe year two to get to MLS Cup. Like, that's the move you make to win. When the Red Bulls get to that edge, it's like, oh, Tyler Adams is good. He should come here. Maybe we'll move this guy here for a little bit of money. Like, it's not the point of the club. And that can be okay to an extent. But the ceiling, I think, for fans has gotten really frustrating. That's what me and Tom sort of were talking about, is like, they know. If you are a fan of that team, you know, oh, things are going well. Uh-oh. What's Red Bull Global going to do? Where else can this player fit in the Red Bull Global?
What captain am I going to sell next?
Exactly. and especially, and that whole thing with Dax and Sasha and Robles of like, oh, we got to get rid of them before they're too old. It's like, it's okay. It's fine. Like if Red Bull Global is paying Dax McCarty $700,000 to play center mid for their team, the whole thing's not going to collapse. Like, relax. You don't have to be 10 years ahead at all times. So your hope would be Jurgen Klopp has a little bit more of a holistic idea about the whole thing runs. I think the big issue for Red Bulls for New York is like, they haven't been fully staffed. They're not fully funded. Like, it is not one of the most robust clubs in Major League Soccer. And why wouldn't it be? Like, it has this global family that it has. So you'd hope some of that bounces through. But I don't know. This is like, the guy was president. And then when after you're being president, every company's like, we'd love to put your name on our thing. So just choose your title and tell us when you're working and we'll see you there. Like, that's kind of what this feels like.
Right. Like, you would hope it's not like he's just an ambassador for soccer. Right. And actually.
But I think it will.
It's interesting. I mean, it does feel a little bit like, one of what feels like one of the great minds of the sport, especially from, in the technical area and on the pitch and man management and stuff like that. You hear how you saw the Liverpool players crying at the end of the season, that, you know, they were going to miss him as their coach, and to not have him do that, and who knows how long he's in this particular role, but I think of that Vince Carter meme, like, I got one more in me. That's what I want from, from Jurgen Klopp.
I believe the language in the contract says that if Nagelsmann leaves the national team, he's allowed to take himself out to become German national team manager.
Interesting.
So this very much feels like he's burnt out. He doesn't want to coach day to day. The German job's not available. And he probably doesn't want a different club job, at least right now. Mm-hmm. And so this is a take a step back, breathe a little bit, but stay in the game job while potentially that one opens up or something else. I will say, all the money and resources and all the thing Red Bull have, it's similar to City Football Group, and Pep went there, right? So like these genius guys who have these ideas, at some point, you need the money to fund it because it's not all perfect. It's not all going to run itself. And so if Klopp has ideas about the way he thinks the game should be played or players should be developed and all these things, there's no place better to institute it than at Red Bull because of the all of the players and all of the things that you can use to touch across the world.
Yeah. I mean, he's just going to, he's going to help and support RB Salzburg get back to the top like they do every single year in Austria.
Bro, if it was me, I'd be Bragantino. I'd be like, I live in Brazil at Bragantino. And then like you guys call me and then I'll let you know what's going on in Europe.
I just want to mention this. Not we don't have this listed, but I just remember. Do we have any update on Memphis Depay? Because I just heard
he's in Brazil.
That his contract, I heard this, and this is just from a fan in the Instagram comments.
Allegedly.
But I didn't verify this, that they're going to terminate his contract because the sponsor that is basically, that helped him get to the club is in some legal issue. Our producer Carter is probably going to look into it, but if that's the case, is that true? Okay, it is true. So apparently Memphis Depay will probably be a free agent soon, which is crazy. I'm wearing the MLS All-Star jersey, bro. Yeah. Come on, do it, dog. If that is the case, and we just saw Memphis Depay in the press conference talk about how proud he was to make this move, and everybody thought it was ridiculous for him to go to Brazil, but he realized this is a big move. He talked about connecting with his black roots and nice. Not having a great relationship with his father and how Brazil is the perfect place to. I'm like, what is going on?
2 days later, he's out the door.
What? Yikes. That was such a heartfelt, emotional speech. And then this, so I would imagine nothing of it is his fault. But man, that would be wild. And then, my drooling, I'm salivating. Yeah. My MLS salivation is just like, bro, seeing him play in the U.S. would be so dope. I mean, there's a bunch of teams he would be like, I think a great fit for. But man, this is a wild story, and I'll get more updates.
He's already played. I'm reading it now. He's already played. I thought he like got introduced, but the contract wasn't done. He's already played, but they're losing their sponsor now, and so they won't have the money. Yeah, come to Major League Soccer. I have said 1,000 times he should come to Atlanta because I think it would be cool, but he could go to Chicago too.
Okay, yeah.
I think Greg speaks Dutch.
Does he?
I think so. He lived there.
Oh, okay. Greg played in Germany.
He started in the Netherlands. So out of college, I think he went and lived in the Netherlands on his own. Okay. And then he played in Germany as well.
Look at that. Let us be the GMs, Greg. We're connecting all the dots. Yeah. All right. You mentioned Pep Guardiola. There has been an update with the Manchester City trial. And a lot of it is just legalese and really not that exciting.
But
that's the thing.
If a lawyer tells you something that you can't read, they always tell you they won.
They effectively, I don't have it in front of me, but if I remember correctly, they're basically a lot of challenges that Manchester City has made to the Premier League and saying like why they, it's a sort of paraphrase, at least the way I understand it. Manchester City's argument has been that like the Premier League shouldn't be deciding how much a sponsorship is worth and what is like that correct kind of like valuation. And basically they're like, who are you to tell me how much somebody's supposed to pay me? And then they even brought up, it was a wild argument, but they brought up, they said like, we lost a sponsorship opportunity because of the scrutiny that the Premier League was putting on us. And we lost that sponsorship to the Premier League itself, that the Premier League started working with that sponsor. And they don't say specifically which one, but they said the Premier League started working with that sponsor and we lost that opportunity. And that was money.
So now we need to pay ourselves even more. To cover that.
When you strip away the big words and the fancy legalese and all this stuff, it's a little bit like, all right, they're really trying anything to kind of muck the waters. Just, this is crazy. What are you doing? What are you in our business and all this other stuff? And the challenge that they won in this tribunal was like something called shareholder loans or something like that. So I guess it's like borrowing from the shareholders or something like that, that that clubs do this because there's less interest or no interest on these loans. So it's a big advantage to like, you know, sign a player or blah, blah, blah. They can get money from this particular place. And the challenge that they won is that now these loans will be more scrutinized by the Premier League across every single club. And that's why even some people saw that and they were like, all right, yeah, Arsenal, yeah, go get them or whatever. And it's just like, they had to clarify. They're like, no, this is not going to be backdated. This is going to be only going forward.
All the cheating before was acceptable.
So I love that. Well, all of it seems, you know, everybody constantly brings up the 115 charges and blah, blah, blah. But when you like kind of go through the specifics, they have to make some kind of argument to defend against breaking these rules. And some of it is just a little bit silly. I'm not a person that is like,
here comes the Everton fan.
No. Because there's been a conversation. We were in the pre-production meeting. We were like asking, like, should they have a points deduction? Like, should it be, you know, relegated and all this other stuff? I personally feel Manchester City won those games. They did. They are such a dominant team. And I understand the breaking the rules. Sure. And if there is a penalty put on them, I will understand that too. But I don't want to pay attention to this all this legal stuff. I'm like, I'm just watching the game. Then I watch the game. Then they're very, very good. It's like the argument. What's the exact argument that people are making? Is it that, oh, they wouldn't have been able to sign player A, B, and C or whatever?
The argument is they wouldn't have been able to win 25 games or go undefeated across 25 games if their backup wasn't an international, right?
Sure.
So, like, that's sort of the, I feel with Man City is, like, there's only 11 players on the field, and 11 players have to play. And, like, they are not injecting gold into their veins to, like, be the best player on the planet, right? There's no, like, Iron Man stuff happening. But there are X great players in the world, and if they have all of them on their team, it makes it a little easier to be competitive. And I think especially when you talk about the Premier League competition specifically, you're talking about the ability to contend across all those months. Yeah. So it's like even less maybe for Champions League, where it's like one-offs, ball bounces one way, you've got 90 minutes to come back or don't. what every Liverpool fan and every Arsenal fan will tell you is like, oh, you're 3 points behind Man City in January, you're done. Because Man City's not going to lose another game the rest of the year.
Right.
That helps when you bring Phil Foden off the bench because you have $700 million of attackers in front of him. When you can go from we don't know who our center forward is to Erling Haaland after winning a title, like that's kind of what you're talking about with this team because it's unsustainable. I think sustainability is fair, right? If Leicester City builds a great team, sells them for crazy numbers, buys the next set of players, or what Brighton's doing, sells that at a crazy number, like there's a chance Brighton could build up a $1 billion transfer fund because of their competitive ability. This isn't even like Man City wasn't a big team before this. This is straight up rich guy injects money or rich company injects money or rich royal family or oil. And then it starts to splurge out. And I can understand being frustrated by that and being upset about that. You built the system this way, though, is part of the problem.
Sure. I wonder if we're at a point where Manchester City is like too big to fail. Are they so enshrined and
I think they're a club now. Yeah. Like Chelsea, kind of, right? They are like, you go around the world and you go places and people have City jerseys on and people are blue forever, even though they started rooting 5 years ago and stuff like that. And like, yeah, I think they're a club. And if they were to bounce down, let's say one division, 1 year, I think you still have such a large fan base that they would continue to be one of the big teams.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we saw I think of Juventus when they had the scandal and they were sent down like third division or something like that. Second division. It would be really brave, I think, of the Premier League if it's a court that is deciding it. But if that kind of a penalty was put on them, especially as an Everton fan, I'm just like, all right, well, give them a little, let them know, slap on them on the wrist a little bit, let them know. I mean, we like went over the PSR by like $8 and they're like, all right, 20 points. Done.
You are dead.
How dare you sully what is the Premier League? You know what I mean?
But if you had done 103 more things incorrectly, then you would have been fine.
They'd be like, oh no, okay, Everton's too historic of a club to face any fine or penalty. But yeah. So again, we won't hear the final kind of decision with this for a few more months. But I think those particular details are getting interesting because the trial itself is kind of lend itself to, I think, a little bit of humor. The final thing in this.
Let me ask this before we move on. If we were betting and making, who do you think is the first City person that cries in a post game and does like, I'm so proud of us for what we've overcome? Do you think it's Pep or do you think it's one of the players who's like, we've just been through so much the last few months and it's just been so hard. And it's like, oh, you mean the trials about how you guys all get paid too much money? Because you know it's coming.
I would imagine it'd be interesting because Pep has also gone on record in plenty of press conferences and said like, hey, if there's anything going on that is not above board, I'm out of here. I've asked them directly. I asked them, what are they doing? Sure. And they're telling me.
For sure, man.
I mean, he seems like he's being truthful.
He demanded a 37th center back.
So, interesting stuff with them. The final thing, we mentioned it on Monday that about Paul Pogba coming back to professional football, but now there are rumors that he will be signing with Marseille. So that would be an interesting move. I know Juventus wants to probably terminate that contract. There's probably just too much baggage to figure anything out. But Marseille have a decent squad. This would be an interesting. So they have obviously Aubameyang. They have De Zerbi is the coach currently. Neil Maupai, Everton legend. Let's go, Twitter demon.
Nice.
And so it feels like definitely a decent squad and could challenge Ligue 1 just a little bit. But Paul Pogba coming back, you know, we're talking about Memphis Depay, but I'm on Pogba. America will give you another chance, bro. Like,
do not even get me started. If he doesn't sign in Major League Soccer, I'm done. I'm out.
He was at the Inter Miami game the other day.
My understanding was he got hurt a little while back and he rehabbed in Miami. Oh, I think he might own a house in
Miami.
Now, I don't know that he's going to sign with Miami because they're only allowed X amount of players unless they go Man City, which possibility based off what things are. But like, first, so, okay, this is my argument. Major League Soccer, you're never going to sign another Messi. Impossible. Right after you signed Messi, you could have tried to sign Neymar. It wouldn't have been the same level. It would have been crazy money. He's the only other name in that conversation.
Yeah.
Now that he's gone to Saudi Arabia, that's over. Like, he's not going to have the buzz coming out of Saudi Arabia. Paul Pogba, while he's not the player on these levels, is, in terms of media reach and like desirability and marketability, is in an echelon close to these guys. I think Man U put together a report the day they signed him of like how they broke every single metric that any club had used based off just the announcement of signing him. You add on to that for soccer fans around the world, everyone's tuning in for at least four games to be like, what is this? This guy hasn't played. We don't know who he is. Like March 5th next year, MLS season starts. He plays for Chicago Fire or Atlanta United. You better believe everyone in the world's being like, oh, Pogba plays this week. Like, I want to see what this is.
Yeah.
And if he is good, he's fun. Like, he's not pure attacking creative, but he's worth the ticket admission when you go and watch him play.
100%.
He is a no-brainer that MLS has to put everything together to try and sign him. It's not going to be a messy deal. He's not getting the season pass thing and all that stuff. But like a team that puts down the right amount of money, an Insigne-level contract maybe, could be able to bring him into a place he wants to be. And if he signs with Marseille instead, which by the way is classic Marseille, like Rabiot just signed with them, Mason Greenwood's on this team. You had Alexis Sanchez go back there like 37 times. Like Marseille is very much the like, oh, that's still in? Like the bin of like weird names that you didn't. Guys will sit around just naming people. That's literally the Marseille lineup half the time. But like if MLS doesn't get this done, that's insane.
Yeah, dude. I remember being in Germany and we were in in Frankfurt. It was a Bayern Munich against Eintracht Frankfurt, and there was a pregame, I think it was like a press conference with I think the former director at Bayern Munich, and they were talking about when they signed Philip Coutinho, and they said that he was like, what Philip Coutinho was basically the biggest player we ever signed for this club, like the amount of just like he was like the Instagram followers. It was just like we signed Kim Kardashian, bro. He was just like, it was like the amount of attention that he brought to our club is what essentially justified signing him to the club. Like these are just incredible business decisions. I mean, in Coutinho's case, it wasn't that big of a splash like on the pitch, but still, it's not bad moves. You know, nobody's upset that Coutinho was there or Pogba being at an MLS team or whatever.
Reminder, Pogba's brother played for Atlanta.
That's right. I mentioned that. Florentine Pogba.
Okay. Get it done, Garth.
Who has
Get
a bobblehead that we own. We have a Florentine That's Pogba sick. Bobblehead, which is like, probably one of the most obscure bobbleheads that I think I've ever been made. So, all right. We have a lot more to cover. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this. All right, let's get to the MLS 22 under 22 list. I know everybody loves award shows and the big, you know, the trophies and whatever. That's not why we do this, David. Okay, we're here for the love of the game. But no, the 22 under 22 list is out, and it's obviously the 22 best players that are not 22 years old yet. And this has been it leaves the room for a little bit of hey, why wasn't my guy on here? But the number one on the list was Diego Gomez of Inter Miami, and not too much of a shock here. I think the amount of Inter Miami players is maybe a little bit of a shock to some people because there are five, and it's a little bit of, we know, especially with Inter Miami, That's where the old guys go. That's where they go to, you
well,
know.
Someone needs to run to cover ground for the old
exactly.
guys.
Send them to a farm upstate, and that's Major League Soccer. But no, for Inter Miami to have five players on this list, I think says a lot about, I think, the trust and responsibility that is put on basically running for those old guys. Because somebody has to do the running and defending and maintaining possession and stuff like that. Like, it can't just be Suarez, Busquets, Messi, and Alba passing it to each other. And so a lot of credit, because it's also Kremaski, Federico Redondo. That one's a little... You just got here, dog. Why are we on this list? But
well,
you are
here's
good.
One of the problems. So when they send you the list and the categories, one of the categories is like potential transfer value.
Uh-huh.
Redondo, this is one of the problems I always have with this. Redondo, Tomas Aviles have already accrued more value in the coming to MLS than some of these players will ever accrue in their entire careers.
Wow.
And then some other MLS teams will ever spend. So, like, when you're doing the rankings, you're like, well, do I think that Quinn Sullivan is going to be worth more than $10 million in his career? Probably not. Redondo already is. So, if Redondo falls apart and they sell him off for parts in 2 years, offensive to talk about players that way, but I did it.
Okay.
He probably will, over the course of his career, be worth more in transfer value than half the other players on this list. And that's Inter Miami's decision.
Exactly. Yeah. This is
That's how you buy the spots on the list, man. It only costs $10 million.
It's rigged, David. All right. You worked at Major League Soccer.
Freelance.
No. I mean, look, this is any ranking or list is you know, whatever. It's good. It's a PR sort of a move. I think the inclusion of Kevin Sullivan is also now that you mentioned the potential transfer value aspect, I'm like, okay, then that makes a little bit more sense, because it's not solely about what they've contributed on the pitch, because Kevin has barely played in Major League Soccer. So a couple names I was just sort of happy to see there. I think Owen Wolf for Austin FC, you know, he just scored a great goal. I'm thinking of his brother at Atlanta. He scored a great goal over the weekend. Tyler Wolf. But Owen Wolf, I think, has been...
That may have been who people thought they were voting for.
He's been a great player. He comes off the bench a lot for Austin. And even though, you know, they did not have a great year, I'm happy to see his inclusion there. But the David Ruiz is another one for Inter Miami. That this one feels right and totally justified, and it feels much more. He's a homegrown, if I'm not mistaken, and it feels much more like. This kid has put in the effort and time, and you see the amount that he runs, that he defends. I mean, he does anything necessary to just maintain a spot on that team. So his inclusion out of all the Inter Miami players feels the most kind of justified.
Well, and Gomez, right?
Oh, and Gomez, yeah, without. But I mean, Gomez also, I think for the international players, there's a little bit of a like, okay, yeah, you're supposed to be good. That's why we brought you.
Right. That's why you were a part of this. No, 100%. I think Ruiz is one where he also benefits from they're really good and he gets seen a lot, and where he fills in, like, this is someone who's not eligible for this list, but Jake Davis at Sporting KC plays right back, plays center mid, one of the two roles. Like, he fills in wherever his team needs. David Ruiz does that, but for this record-setting Supporters Shield winning team. So people are going to value that more. They're going to notice that more. And it's higher leverage. Like, the minutes he's playing, right, are higher leverage minutes where they're semifinals, they're finals, they're must-win games, all these types of things. So I think it's a ton of credit to him. He probably doesn't have as high a ceiling as some of these other players. In 7 years, I don't think you're going to be saying this is the best player in the region. But the player he's already become is already a really useful player. And normally when you do this list, you kind of fall into a break at some point where now you don't have, you know, the top 10 to 15 are great potential and currently good players. Then you break into, okay, do I want to lean into currently good players who I don't think have as high a ceiling? Or do I want to lean into players that I think have a really high ceiling but haven't seen it yet? Like we talked about, Duran in the first segment. He wasn't on the 22 under 22 list because Chicago Fire never played him. So like you had to watch him and say like, this guy's really good at soccer and I think he's going to make it based off nothing. And there's a lot of really good young players. So that's kind of where you fall in that list. And I think you see as you go along, David Martinez, right ahead of David Ruiz, is unbelievable potential. And when the list was voted on, because he hadn't even played that Cincinnati game yet when he scored, we hadn't really seen him play. So you had to just trust that the talent was there. And that's him and Ruiz are like the polar opposites, two spots apart.
Yeah. I mean, we before we started recording the segment, we were talking about Tavon Gray. And I was like, I looked at, as soon as I saw the list, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why is Tavon Gray not on this list? And then I look up Tavon's age. He turned 22 August like 9th or something like that. And it's just like, all right, bro, why are we doing? Come on. He got
senior citizen home, man.
He's done really well up until turning 22. He's just happened not to be 22 right at this moment as this list is being put together. It seems like we should maybe just say if you were 22 at the beginning of the season or if you're under 22, I don't know. I'm just saying. I mean, look.
Then
we
get 23-year-olds who are like, I was 22 in January, and it's now, what if I was 22 6 years ago?
Okay. I belong.
Christian McFarlane made the list.
Who made it? What'd you say?
Christian McFarlane, the NYCFC left back.
That was cool. He's already going to Manchester City. Yeah. You know, him and Kevin are going to be homies out there. So that was cool to see. Diego Gomez, the one thing, his the announcement video that Inter Miami did to tell him he was number one on the list was incredibly emotional. I'm just scrolling. You know, looking up what's happening with Hurricane Milton, and then now I am crying. I don't know where we are, our audiences on the toxic masculinity sort of level. Alexis is admittedly, he's like, I don't cry. I never cry, never cried, never heard of it.
Alexis is the most toxic on the scale. You're saying if the scale is Alexis to human, where?
Well, Alexis is not like, he's not like, you shouldn't cry because men don't cry. He's not that level. And I'm like, if you're not crying, you ain't a man. I bully you for not crying. Okay. Yeah. So that's where I'm at.
If an Olympic commercial comes on about how much a family helped an Olympian get to the Olympics, I'm out.
There's something that so watching Diego Gomez, the video they had was his family called in and his whole family got in. They were all in the living room and his mother announced to him on a Zoom call that or Microsoft Teams. I don't know why people are using these days. You know, it's kind of crazy. Why are we using Teams?
Cover our bases.
Okay. Unless Microsoft Teams is a sponsor of this show, then it's a great product and I really hope more people use it. She announces to him that he has won it and he starts telling her, you know, thank you and how he's so grateful for everything that they've done for him. There's something about parents loving their children and supporting their children that just gets me because I'm just like, bro, if only I had that. You know what I mean? There's an envy. There's a jealousy. My parents loved in the sense of like, we gave you the tools you need to take care of yourself, which is admirable. Yeah. They survived as immigrants in this country. But when I see parents directly being like, especially with like soccer moms and dads, you know what I mean? That are like, We had to drive you to every practice. We had to be there. We had to make sacrifices. We had to find babysitters for the other kids, or the other kids were in their own league, and we had to drive. I cry immediately. I'm just like, I know exactly what you've been through. This is crazy.
I will say this part though. You think they explain what this list is before they like? There's no. I'm just guessing. You're not sitting in a living room in Asuncion, Paraguay, being like, one day, the dream is to be on the 22 under the body armor, 22 under 22.
Can't forget body armor.
It's not a Powerade family down there.
Exactly. I think there's a little bit that we all have to do. So we're, you know, talking about creating the significance and culture of American soccer. And and it has like goofy things like this, goofy lists that are sponsored by Body Armor. But to some people, I mean, it means I mean, something. I mean, we got to start kind of like somewhere. I mean, even, you know.
You always want to be on top, right?
Yeah.
You don't know what it, like, if you're given an award, you're like, I don't know why, or I don't care, right? You're first, and that's great.
Yeah. I mean, it is a little bit like, you know, I mean, the trophy culture is a little bit like, oh, do we need a Ballon d'Or winner? I mean, they already won the World Cup. Yeah. They have that. I mean, we can all agree, like, hey, that's a good player, right? Because he won the biggest trophy that you could win in this whole sport. But no, here's another one. Just make just you feel a little bit.
In case you didn't get it. I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's Tony Kornheiser who goes off on the ESPYs.
Yeah.
He's like, they literally play the sports games to win trophies. You don't need to have an award show. Movies and music don't have award or don't have trophies.
Yeah. This is, it's not a huge necessity, but whatever. Yeah. Still, even with all that, as hypocritical as I might sound, I'm crying watching Diego Gomez win the number one in the 22 under 22. It works. It works on me. I can't control it. I'm only human. All right. Is there anything else? Oh yeah. Oh no, that's it. We have nothing else on that. On MLS 22 under 22. We got a couple other things. We got some Rapido reactions right after this. So come right back. All right, let's get to Rapido reactions. We have 90 seconds to talk about each particular topic. Producer Carter will get us started. So let's do it, Carter. What do we got up first?
Iniesta finally retired from football. Your thoughts?
Congratulations to one of the greats. He is someone, if you like the sport, you love him. And there are a lot of young players who owe him a ton because the like small, clean on the ball player was dying out of the game, I think, and it's been now in vogue because of Iniesta.
Yeah, there's something to like similar to what you said, like, as far as that appreciation. Iniesta is one of those players that made me more interested in the like what's really happening in this game.
The chessboard.
Just like, it doesn't look like he's doing too much, yet he's doing a lot. And you see how important he is to a team, even though he may not be scoring all the goals and stuff like that. The one blemish on his career. Do you know it? The photo that he took in 2019 for Christmas with like the three kings. It was like three kings or whatever. But the other characters that were playing the three kings were in blackface. He had to answer for this.
Oh, cool. European person. No real curveball.
Whoopsie.
At least he wasn't in it like Griezmann.
Almost. Yeah, exactly. Right. Just almost a flawless career. Nothing to be said. And boom, he had to be like, hey, these are my blackface homies. What you think? Merry Christmas, y'all. No, dude. But yeah, absolute legend. Another guy watching all the videos and stuff. It's just like, bro, just too important to this game, man. So, all right. What we got next?
All right, next year we've got Cole Palmer wins English Player of the Year.
Cole Palmer winning Player of the Year. I'm not upset exactly, but then I think about, do we know what from, is it 2024? Is it the season? Is it the calendar year of like last season to this season? There's a little bit of like Player of the Year.
I love parsing these things because I do this all the time and Tom yells at me. He's like, it doesn't matter, dude. It's a lit. Like, just pick one. I'm like, well, are we?
I mean, because Cole Palmer didn't make the 22 under 22. And
I was
going to
say, this sounds like, you sound like someone who has birthday cutoffs, hard birthday cutoffs. Okay.
Let me see your birth certificate, Cole Palmer. It's Jude Bellingham. In my opinion, he wins the Champions League. I mean, he's just an important fixture.
But he doesn't play in a league.
He doesn't play in an English league? What do you mean?
That was my joke. Oh, in England, there's one league, and that's it.
I thought we had like a disconnection, or maybe I missed the word because I was about to flip out.
So here's the thing. One, yes, right? Jude Bellingham's the best player in the world over the last 12 months, so he probably should be the best English player. The other part of this that's funny is that Cole Palmer couldn't get on the field at the Euros for the England Euros.
Exactly. That's the other really weird one. I mean, he was... he scored an important goal. He had a big moment, but man, I mean, best player of the year. Even him receiving the award has to be like, you sure? Me? Like,
Have you seen video of Cole Palmer? He is not, there's not a lot of thought process going in as he receives that award.
Okay, Cole. You're welcome on the show anytime, though. Don't go on. Yeah,
no, 100%, man. Huge fan.
All right. What do we got next?
All right. Next, Nusair Mazraoui is out for a few weeks after a procedure on his heart. What does this mean for Manchester United?
Okay, so he has a heart arrhythmia. So, and apparently it has been taken care of, and he's going to be out for, I think, a month or two. So, I guess, glad it was like detected and the seriousness and everything kind of resolved. A few posts kind of suggest that it is not going to be like a long-term issue that he deals with. And I think when I hear this, I think of like Clint Dempsey and stuff like that. But the first thing I thought is just like just another a player that is going to be out for Manchester United, and they are already in a really terrible spot. Just where are they on the table? 14th or 13th or something like that. I just worry more about this club and their fan base, because I think they're going to lose their minds. Just probably just losing, their next few games.
Yeah. First of all, it's really scary. It's really scary that like pro athletes who get medicals every time they're in their building / every time they get transferred, this stuff really can go undetected based off what you're doing and the information that you're gathering and all that stuff, or the timing of it. And he's one of those players I think we've all really enjoyed watching. You talk about that Morocco run at the World Cup, like he was a huge part of that. And then the time in Germany and all that he's been able to accomplish. But as you said, this is a Man U team that's already decimated. And so to lose a versatile player as well, one that can slide in more centrally, can play outside, all of that stuff, that's like the last thing you need. As a Jets fan, I can say a loss to fire a coach that's not very good might be worth it every once in a while. So maybe this ends well, technically, for Man U, but they're not going to win the title this year. You'd just like to reset maybe in January.
Well, you know what? The Mets are going to do a lot better than Manchester United this year, I think. Oh. We always have that.
All right. Wojciech Szczęsny basically got caught smoking cigarettes recently, and his response was, "I will smoke cigarettes if I want. I've been smoking them my entire career." Your thoughts?
I'm going to give the entire quote because I think it's great. So Szczęsny says, "There are things that I don't change in my personal life, and it's nobody's business if I smoke. It doesn't affect what I do on the pitch. If anyone thinks that I will change the way I am in my personal life, think again, because I am who I am. I've been this way my whole life." I love it, bro. He's just like, This is me. I'm a chain smoker. I'm not changing for anybody. Only a goalkeeper can get away with this.
100%. That's like, honestly, dude, if you're another goalkeeper, you're like, come on, man. Like, we've been fighting to prove we're athletes this whole time. Just keep it in private.
Man, it's a, look, not with my 2024 brain and thinking about athletes, and you see all the nutrition stuff. My wife is a nutritionist. You think of sports nutrition and sports science and where it has gone and where it was. For a player to just be like, I'm smoking, I'm not changing. It's just the fact that he smokes at all. Fact that he smokes at all, I think, is so insane and crazy in this day and age, where the level of competition, the margins are so small between you and that World Cup striker that is shooting a ball at you. Yeah. Wouldn't you want every advantage that you have to compete with that? Wild. And then also, Barcelona's like, yeah, that's our guy. We got nobody else. Sure. There's nobody else we could have brought in.
To be clear, Barcelona said, oh, the window's closed and everyone's hurt. That's our guy. So for starters, on the like, I'm not going to change. It's like, yeah, at this point, dude, like no one, you've already had your full career. So no one now can come in and be like, you won't make it if you don't do this. I also don't think this is the first time. I think there was a story that came out in Arsenal that he was smoking in the showers, and that Wenger walked in on him smoking in the showers and was like, get that out of here. You know, it calms the nerves. Maybe that's all he needs is a little bit of that. He's basically the kicker in the replacements at this point.
All right, what do we got? And last up, what do we got?
We've got some increasing amount of players who are threatening to boycott the season because of the amount of games played. We've already had Rodri, come out and say that, Jan Sommer. But now we have Mark Cucurella and Imerical Report coming out and saying the same thing. What are your thoughts on a potential boycott?
I don't know where you lie on this. In general, I'm a, you know, fan of the players, players unions. I think, you know, they know best about their own health and safety. So it's not really that, you know, I don't think it's that confusing of an issue. I think what's interesting is I think it's the Club World Cup that has tilted the scale so much where people are like, all right, well, we can't just be available to play every single tournament all over the world. The Club World Cup, which I'm excited about, and it's coming to the U.S., but there should be some level of understanding, because I think the discourse online is like, this is why we have five subs and this rotation, and why you guys get paid so much, and why are you complaining? But you can only push a human body so much before it really just falls apart. So I don't really see. I think if it has to happen, it has to happen. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. When the whole conversation started, Rodri, I think, really was the one that started it. And then, as you said, you know, some of the other names in there, I was like, oh yeah, 100%. Like, this is ridiculous. It feels overwhelming. Like, even as a viewer, I'm like, oh, there's more games on this week? I thought we just did that. And like, so, and I think it's actually hurting a lot of the product. Like, I think it's worse soccer very often. I think you see that in a lot of international tournaments of like, people are exhausted. It's so high stakes. It's so high pressure. And then I got stuck in the like videos of old plumbers in England being like, mate, you want wages? Like, you make X million dollars. And you're like, yeah, it is a job. We do all work 12 months a year.
Exactly.
So I can understand a little bit of that. I think you get into a world of like, what's the balance? And the balance is probably some level of limiting some competitions and then enlarging squads, which will probably make things even more uneven in the like, Pep Guardiola needs a 37 center back because he needs to cover another competition.
There has to be some level of compromise in this.
I think the part that's scary or sad for a lot of people is like, it doesn't feel like there's an adult in the room, right? And it feels like the players are being there, have to be the ones to step in, where like every time something happens, you're like, oh, FIFA, oh, UEFA will do this. And then UEFA's like, you know what? We'll make a Europa League. And then we'll add more teams and we'll add more games.
Conference Europa, second division or whatever. All right. Well, the adults in the room, they're 22 under 22. How are they calling them? Why do they have to be the adults? All right. that rapido reaction went a little longer, but that is it for today. David Goss, thank you so much for joining me, man. You crush it per usual. Let everybody know again where they can catch SoccerWise.
Yeah, SoccerWise, anywhere you get your podcast, follow us on any socials. And we come out every single day, 5 days a week now for shows live on YouTube and Twitch on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
It's great stuff. Again, it is becoming a home for the American soccer nerd like me. So I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans everywhere. We're doing a giveaway of EAFC. So we have some EAFC codes if anybody would like to win some of those. So just make sure you follow us on Instagram at Soccer Cooligans. Subscribe here on YouTube. We'll be back on Monday. Alexis will be back. Do we have a guest on Monday? I don't even remember if we do.
Henry Bushnell.
You know Henry from Yahoo Sports?
Not in person, but he's one of the best covering USMNT.
Without a doubt. So we'll recap and recap the Panama game and preview the Mexico game with Henry Bushnell. I played soccer with Henry Bushnell in, I think, in Chicago, I think, or in Kansas City. I don't remember. But
you've only been to Chicago once. You're already on the record in this show. So if you start adding trips
now. No, I've been to Chicago twice.
Now we get into court cases with Man City style where like Christian said once, now it's 103.
He's just not been consistent about his whereabouts. So we have to get to the bottom of that. All right. So come back on Monday. Alexis will be here and we'll be joined by Henry Bushnell as well to talk some USMNT. And I think that's it. Y'all are the absolute best. See you next week. Enjoy. I hope everybody's safe after the hurricane as well. So just give a shout out. So thank you, everybody. Take care. Peace.